The following talk was recorded at Libra Planet 2022, Living Liberation, an annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology from the Free Software Foundation. Libra Planet is a live conference, and speakers often use slides and other visual tools to assist their presentation. You can see the videos of these talks at media.libraplanet.org or on the FSF PeerTube channel. Libra Planet speakers do not represent the mission of the Free Software Foundation. We host speakers talking about their uses of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take a position on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedom of all computer users, Libra Planet is made possible by thousands of individuals. To keep our work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join or making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss. For more information on Libra Planet, you can visit libraplanet.org/conference.
Hi, everyone. I'm Aaron Wolf. I'm a free software and free culture evangelist. And in my day job, I am an independent music teacher and musician. That's actually some of the angles that got me interested in economics through the questions of free culture and music and education, creative work in general. I don't have any particular background in technology or in economics, but I've been interested in these things for a long time. I've been studying these issues for years. The main thing, which I'll mention at one point in this, is I co-founded this fundraising thing for public goods, free software, free culture called snowdrift.coop. And it's through that that I've gotten to continue developing the ideas that I'm going to share with you today, although this talk isn't specifically about that, although it'll be mentioned. I could tell you more about my own personal background, but I'm going to cover a lot today, so let's jump in. I assume most people here know the basics of free software, probably know the general issues about funding and economics, but my goal here is to give you a better mental model, like more helpful memes in a way to think about these issues in terms of how you engage with them in the world and how you talk to other people about them. So we're going to go ahead and jump into talking about the basics of software freedom as just a quick review. We say that computer users have software freedom when they are legally and practically allowed to use, to study, to change, and to share software however they wish. We emphasize free as in freedom because it's not about price. Incidentally, the official four freedoms are use and study plus change and share and share, which I could advocate as actually, I think, is a little more confusing than it needs to be, but it's the same set of principles. So free as in freedom means that people could pay for a copy of software. It's not against the freedoms to do that. The important thing is that whoever has the software has all of these freedoms. So you don't have to share the software necessarily. So it's not necessarily publicly available. But whoever has the software can share it with others. And when they do, it becomes public, then it's public good. So in practice, as long as you have an internet access and an appropriate computer, free software is available to you. So public goods here does not mean good as in good and bad, although free software is good. We are talking about goods like goods and services. So one thing about this economic jargon, I think it's problematic in a lot of ways. I mean, jargon is an issue in and of itself, but when we're talking about the impact of the jargon, what it means politically or sort of how we see things, there's some tweaks that I'm going to make to the way that we talk about the economics, which I think will be appropriate. So we're going to fix some of the jargon. Goods and services is fine enough. If you look up a definition of goods, it'll usually say things about tangible, like physical goods you can touch, though sometimes they'll talk about other senses, and you'll see things about ownership. But for us, we don't need to worry about any of that. We're just going to make this distinction. Goods means anything that you can enjoy separately from the time of production. So the software is made and it exists and it's on your computer. And when you want to use it, you can use it. That makes software a good. Whereas services are actions that provide utility at the time of their performance. So the software development is a service, and so is sharing a copy of software with someone. I'm doing a service by giving this talk, but the recording of the talk will be a good. No, not all services leads to goods, but most of the goods that we have are results of services. So that gives us two ways to think about software economically. We can fund the services, meaning fund the development and the time related to producing the software and the support and the marketing and other services, or we can treat the development as an investment and we can charge for the goods. Now keep that in mind for later. In economics, when you look up types of goods, you'll see these terms, rivalrousness and excludability. And so those sound kind of jargony. Rivalrousness says, are consumers rivals because they can't both get the utility at the same time? So if I have an apple, I can eat it, you can't, you could eat it, we could split it, but we can't both eat it. So that makes us rivals. Of course, we could cut out the seeds and plant them and eventually get a tree, which will give us imperfect copies of the apples, and then we can share them. So rivalry could be seen as a situation in which copying is really hard and costly. Whereas when copying is trivial, then we're not rivals. And that would be called non-rivalrousness. But I don't like that term. That's really technical and it makes rivalry the default. And so let's just talk about scarcity, or when something is scarce. Versus, instead of saying non-scarce, we might say abundant. And that gives us a positive term to talk about what it is when there is an abundance of things, instead of making scarcity the default. And the same thing with excludability, there's a sort of an issue with that, because when we think of excludability, that implies that something that can be excluded should be or will be. But of course, if it's not actually excludable, if it's not actually exclusive, then economically, that's what matters, is whether or not it's open to everyone. And so the opposite there, for just like we have scarcity versus abundance, in the case of exclusion, what we need to do is, what is the positive alternative to that? And the answer would be probably open. We could also talk about shared. That's a little bit confusing. Now, I know that open has its own tensions with the free software versus open source and terms like that, but for economics, this is really an appropriate term. It's whether anybody can access it. So now that we have those the definitions, scarce versus abundant, exclusive versus open, as the two factors, we can talk about the four types of goods. In economics, we can talk about private goods as being scarce and exclusive. If you have the apple, it's scarce, it gets used up, and then it's not available to everybody else. And, you know, I can say this is my apple and not yours, and that's just all the standard market assumptions we have from economics, supply and demand and all of that. Of course, the real world in dealing with all of that is much simpler, much more complicated than the simple economics 101 sort of thing. Incidentally, you'll sometimes hear people make arguments like, hey, you know, don't you know supply and demand, economics 101? And of course, you wouldn't want to make an argument from a 101 level about anything else. If you're a programmer, you probably wouldn't feel good telling somebody, oh, well, this is some programming 101 idea, as if that's an argument against some complicated, nuanced idea. So I'm not suggesting that the simple version of economics, even some of what I'm mentioning today, is all there is. But for the most part, when people talk about normal things you know about economics, private goods is the default assumption. Within the free software movement, that would be hardware. The physical devices that we use pretty much are private goods. Now, common goods are scarce but open, and that has problems. So fish in the sea, trees in the forest, they can get over-harvested. People pollute rivers and oceans and overheat the whole planet. So we can try to police these things, but we can have this tragedy of commons situation where people, you know, if they're not thinking socially and they're doing what's in their own best interest, everybody acting that way, it ruins it for everyone. This is not something with any easy answers, but it's not really what we deal with free software. The closest thing we might have is if you have software updates on a server or something, and in the cases where somehow it's a high bandwidth use, maybe there's a issue in that case. But mostly that's got some similarities, but it's not really what we're talking about. Unfortunately, by the way, there's this term commons. We see creative commons or sometimes digital commons. We're not going to get rid of those terms. And those are not actually referring to common goods. And it's unfortunate the way the terms are used. But keep in mind, economically, the term common goods does mean it's scarce. So you could use it up, and that's an issue. So club goods are the opposite when we have abundance, but it's exclusive. And that's proprietary software. So legal or technical obstacles block access and freedoms. You join the club by accepting the ads or the surveillance or other terms and restrictions, or by paying the membership fees. Now, those restrictions might violate some of our intuitions about how the software should work or how society should share ideas. We can talk about all the complaints we have about proprietary software, but it works economically in the sense that club goods can be pretty profitable. Like the free software song says, hoarders can get piles of money. That's true, hackers. Once a club gets good enough to cover its costs, further growth is just profit, pretty much. Whereas with free software, now we come to public goods. They're abundant and open. And so that means there's no way to fit our normal market economics. Our market economics is based on the defaults of scarcity and exclusion. And in the case where everything is open and abundant, you have this problem, which is we can talk about as a public goods dilemma. Everybody knows that they can use the software, they can use the public good. It's not taking anything away from anyone else. So we have this dilemma about producing the work or maintaining it in the first place. There isn't really a problem if it's trivial to produce the public good in the first place. Maybe you have an issue of somebody who has a profitable business doing club goods might be interested in spreading FUD and undermining, sabotaging the public goods. But that aside, you can produce something trivially, everybody in the world can benefit from it, there's no problem. But when they are costly to maintain or produce, how do we support that work? So if you use public goods without supporting them, that's called free riding. And that has two issues. The first one is, can we somehow get enough support to have the public goods at all? Like, will they exist if everybody's free riding? Well, somebody has to do the work. But if we can get them and somebody does some of the work, at least it exists, then we can talk about this question of spreading the burden fairly. In most cases, we're stuck with the first problem. Public goods struggle with nowhere near enough funding, and it's not clear how to get a critical mass of support. So we have a coordination problem. Now, I don't want you to think of this as all or nothing. So these things are on a continuum. Goods can be more or less open. They can be scarce and abundant, but it's not all or nothing. It can be somewhat scarce or mostly abundant. We might have aspects of a product that can be more scarce and aspects that are not. So we might have the freedom to, well, I'll talk about this example in a second. We might have the freedom to copy or share something, but not to adapt it. So we call it free software if you have all the freedoms, but if you have some of the freedoms and not some of the others, then that affects the economics of the product. Okay, so a bicycle path would be public goods, especially because if there's no risk of overcrowding and each bicycle on the path doesn't do anything to the path, the wear and tear is just the weather, and the work to put the infrastructure in the first place, then that's just a totally open and abundant public good. Whereas if you have roads for cars, then each vehicle adds congestion and noise and pollution and wear and tear. And so the use of it reduces the value for others. And so there's an aspect of scarcity to it. Access might be a little bit restricted with license rules and things, but for the most part, it's open. So roads are more of a commons, but they have elements of commons and elements of public goods. So you don't need to think of it as absolute all or nothing, black and white. Now, when we go out in the world, you might just want to ask, okay, what am I, how does this thing exist, or what's going on with this product, this good? And you can say, well, let's think of the free software terms. We could talk about whether something's scarce or abundant, whether it's exclusive or open. That's the basic question. And then let's look at access. Is access open or exclusive? Is the use of the thing open or exclusive? Or the freedom to study, or the freedom to change, or the freedom to share? So in the case of something like, in the case of public broadcasting, you have something like NPR, National Public Radio, that's open and abundant. Everybody can access it. Everybody can listen to it. That aspect of it is a public good. But the rights to adapt and to publish are exclusive club goods. So individual radio stations pay to get publishing rights, and nobody else is allowed to share or adapt. Now, when we talk about something where all the freedoms are present, there's no access fee. And I like the term flow, which is free, Libre, open, because that clarifies that we're talking about, in the sense, free, of course, has this confusion with price, because fundamentally, when something is open to everyone, it's gratis. So, you know, it's gratis. Gratis in Spanish, we might say gratis. So people don't use that word as much. So we talk about Libre to clarify, but in practice, economically, free software really is free in almost all cases. And so we're never going to get rid of that confusion in terms of price. And open helps because we're talking about the fact that is everybody can access it, and open is a common term, that there is open source software. There's a bunch of political baggage and history around these terms. But I think flow works really well because it describes the nature of public goods that everybody can sort of adapt in this evolutionary creative way. That doesn't mean all public goods are flow, because a public park isn't flow. You don't go around copying and adapting public parks. Maybe sort of the concept or the plans of them, but that's something else. Anyway, the question that we're talking about today is, how do we fund public goods like free software? There's R&D costs, there's maintenance and support and promotion. Those are all services. So the public goods have to stick to a service-based business model. Like, there's no place for a goods-based one. Goods and services, of course, can be intertwined. We could talk about which features of a project are goods and which ones are services. So in the case of services for free software, there's things like custom development or support, you know, actual one-on-one support. Whereas when you have proprietary service as a software substitute, SaaS, that is also a service-based business model, except you don't have to have the costs of providing dedicated one-on-one service with a human who's paid for that, because what you're doing with that business model is you have software that you program but stays private and then is doing the job of servicing people. It's often called software as a service. That's the standard term, and that still is appropriate economically in terms of understanding that business model. So the problem here is, it's like the software could be a club good, which has its own issues, but instead you don't even allow it to be a good. And then people have to pay for the service indefinitely if they want to keep accessing it. But you have a very, very high profit margin because you don't actually pay for individual people to be supporting and doing the service for each of the customers. It's just access to the software running on a private server. So free software version of that would be providing hosting services, but users can also manage their own software, or they could hire a competing service provider, which limits the amount that a free software project can charge for services, for hosting. Now, in a sense, we're really talking about monopoly politics, monopoly economics here. So a proprietary software and proprietary software services can be economic monopolies, meaning a single seller. It's a matter of what scope counts as a monopoly. So Apple has a monopoly on iOS devices, but Apple and Google together have a duopoly on mainstream, well-supported mobile devices. Again, not black and white in every sense. Maybe a monopoly is not 100%, because it's possible to go out of your way and give up a whole bunch of conveniences and figure out how to get something from a competitor. But in practice, when it's not at all trivial to go against the one dominant seller, then you have a monopoly, and monopolies are super profitable. So that really is what we're dealing with proprietary software. They have trade secrecy is the technical term for the fact that the source code for the software is not available to anybody except the seller. But beyond that, you have copyright and patents, and those are legal monopoly enforcements. The government says nobody else is allowed to sell or support this software. And that's why it's so profitable, which is not necessarily good for society, but it's good for investors. The thing to keep in mind with this is a customers only have the choice to take it or leave it. There's this general situation where if that's the tool to use, then you're stuck with going with the monopoly. And they can then use that power to abuse the customers or charge exorbitant prices. And that's why VC investors, venture capitalists, are interested in startups that have the potential to become effective monopolies. As a quick side note, this is so dominant that I've only a little bit of experience with this, but I've gone to like a startup group where people were talking about what startups were doing and different investors were there. And pretty much the dominant conversation is, what are you doing that's going to somehow give you this control, mainly a patent, sometimes copyright control, where nobody will be able to compete with you? Because they're not interested in supporting businesses that are just functional businesses. They're interested in extremely profitable businesses because they get this monopoly power. I can go on a little bit into some crazy stories about that. Talk to me later, but like one example was a service as a software substitute type of business where a question was asked, well, what about data portability? Couldn't somebody, you know, get their data out and then do something else with it or use a competing service? And I remember thinking, hearing this presentation, that was like a fair question. Oh yeah, data portability, that matters. Yeah, they're trying to check like about this business and whether it's a sort of ethical business that's going to treat their customers well. But that was not the assumption, because the answer was more like, oh, yeah, well, of course we have to provide data portability, because that's, you know, I mean, we'd get in trouble if we didn't do that and people would, you know, be skeptical. But don't worry, nobody would ever leave, because just like with Gmail or something, you know, you can download all of your stuff and try to leave to some service, you know, some other competitor, but you know, nobody actually does that. And it was all about reassuring the people in the audience that even though they had to provide data portability, nobody would actually use it. And they would make sure it would be inconvenient. That's the nature of monopoly economics, which dominates our world today. Incidentally, if you are interested in how monopolies work all across the board, you could check out this journalist, writer, Matt Stoller. His website is mattstoller.substack.com. But I'm going to give you a little apology that I wish his work itself were Flow. I wish it was not a proprietary web service with some sort of a paywall in some cases, although most of it's open. I wish his writings were available to be adapted and translated and incorporated into other things. I could even use elements of them in a talk like this. So I have a general position, which is when something is proprietary, I don't necessarily be complete purist about it, where I'm going to reject it out of hand. But if I do make any compromises, I try to talk about it and not just, ignore the issue. And that would be the same in any proprietary services or software that I use. If I'm telling people to check out a YouTube video, I like to emphasize, you know, sorry about YouTube, or I have a complaint or concern about that. Please use an ad blocker, as opposed to just totally foregoing it or saying nothing. Anyway, free software has no capacity to have monopoly control. That's the fundamental nature of free software. Everybody who gets access to the software has the freedom to do whatever they want with it, including use it within a service business that they're doing or share it with other people. And it's explicitly anti-monopoly, which also means it can't profit at the levels, even from a service providing level, can't compete with the profits of a proprietary business. So how do we fund public goods? Well, the most obvious is taxes. The largest funding for public goods right now, that's what we've got. It solves the free rider problem, because we simply mandate that everyone has to pay in whether or not they use the public goods. Of course, there's debates about state power and bureaucracy, and I'm not going to get into all of that here, but taxes pay for roads and libraries and parks and scientific research and some software. So governments can potentially fund much more free software, but the obvious starting point would be like government use of software itself or software in schools. They could just use more free software even if they didn't pay for it, because that'd be better than them using and funding proprietary software. But potentially those institutions could also fund the software that they use. And that's one way we can have government-funded software. But I'd be happy if the government would just have grants and tax-supported software development for the public to benefit from free software. Now, some people might be skeptical about that. They don't like government involvement in all those things. They care about the free market. And I just want to emphasize that flow public goods, free software, is the ultimate free market type of a resource, in that it's allowing everybody to evolve and develop the things together and to compete, as opposed to the proprietary software, which uses all these anti-competitive restrictions in order to maintain monopoly control. So in principle, people who are skeptical of government and want free market, they should be supporting free software as well, but that doesn't answer the question about how to fund it. So in practice, we are relying on donations if we're not going to use public funding in the government sense. So most or many free software projects today rely on volunteer donations and volunteer time, and that works best when it's well coordinated. So a business league like the Linux Foundation, as an example, is a 501c6 in the United States. They are a bunch of different businesses who all use Linux, and they coordinate so that they all decide to contribute, and then the free software project is funded. Now, those businesses usually make proprietary club goods for end users at the end of the day. Whatever the, you know, Internet of Things stuff that uses Linux, and even though the Linux kernel itself is free software and people have to get a copy of the GNU GPL when they get their thing, there's going to be all sorts of restrictions, and the software built on top of it is not free software. So even though in a way this is helping and supporting free software, this business focus isn't getting the freedom out there into the world. But of course, that does still give us some free software for which other free software projects could develop. You know, we still use the Linux kernel to then develop free operating systems and free services and free software for others. Of course, we could have businesses that coordinate to use free software that are more themselves the end users, like a retail business, grocery stores or something, using point of sale software that could be free software, and they could all coordinate. I'm not aware of anything like that, but it's certainly possible. Right now in practice, they're not coordinated. So each store either just makes their own in-house software if they're a big enough conglomerate, or they just buy some proprietary software to run their business because they don't know about free software options, or the free software options aren't good enough based on the features that they're requiring. So people keep using free software because there's lock-in and sunk costs. And that's just the challenge of the free software of public goods funding dilemma, this coordination problem. Same thing with the general public. We are individual consumers. We're not organized. And if one person goes out and decides what to buy, they don't have enough funds. They put $10 towards a free software project. It doesn't suddenly turn it good enough for them to have all the features they wish it could have. Of course, if everybody in the general public all coordinated to fund the thing, or to put the same money that we put into proprietary software went to free software instead, then the free software could have just as many developers or more, and just as much resources and marketing, and make just as good products. I mean, for that matter, the exact same people who make proprietary software could just be funded by the exact same customers saying, you know, why don't you just make it free software and we'll keep funding you? And the problem is that they generally don't get the same level of funding because people are able to free ride and the general public is uncoordinated. So this is the dilemma that brought me to starting Snowdrift.coop, which is this project that I've been working on for coming on a decade, and it's still struggling, and that's a whole nother story, and that would be another talk. But the basic point that brought us to even start this was to address this coordination problem. I want to chip in. I don't want to be the only one chipping in. I want everybody else to help so that we can actually make it done, get the free software we want, or the free culture, or whatever else. And the basic idea that we have is crowd matching, where I get to say, I will just chip in more as the crowd grows and just, you know, was agrees to give with me. So something like, I'll give $1 a month to each project that I like, you know, for every 1,000 people who are giving to it with me. So this idea of crowd matching is a quadratic thing. It's like it grows where my $10, instead of just being $10, which doesn't make a difference, it would be part of 10,000 people. And then you can give $100,000 a month to some project and really make a difference. And I don't want it to be all or nothing. Black and white, again, is a problem. If you have a Kickstarter campaign and you just have some threshold and you say, well, if we don't hit this threshold, then nothing happens. Even the work to set that all up and to do the campaigning all for nothing is really discouraging. And then there's no mutual reassurance. There's no extra coordination once you hit the threshold. So in principle, all of this makes sense. We unfortunately face the exact same dilemma where until we have a fully working system that's really robust, we don't have good funding to support developing it. So we just have a volunteer team working on this. It's been years of struggles. I can go into the details. Yes, we make mistakes. We had some mission creep and whatever. Again, that would be another talk. But we actually sort of have it kind of functioning, but we haven't gotten to the point where we made a big announcement about it. Something like 140 something people figured out how to pledge to the project itself and currently paying 14 cents a month and inviting everyone else to come join, even though we haven't made a big announcement about it. But we're still waiting until we get a little more things in place and the website looks good. And even what I'm talking about today, this framing about economics, is stuff that I've been putting together while thinking about this project. And getting the ideas that I'm sharing with you today in a really clear context, getting them all, getting this presented well so that people can really understand why crowd matching matters, why we need to coordinate and make sense of the world this way. I think that's a very important factor to getting this all to work. So people, it's not just a technical tool, like it's going to work because the software does the right math. It's a more of a social tool. We need to have people understand why we need to coordinate, and we need that type of solidarity in order to have public goods. So generally, we have this problem where investing doesn't work because people who would put into any of the free software, there's just no room for profit within a free software thing. At the best, it can just fund its cover its expenses. And so that's one of the reasons why you don't have startup investors, you know, being able to do this. There's no return, there's no way to get it going. So you have this dilemma also about getting started. Grants can help, that do exist. They have their own challenges and we'll go into it right now. People talk about the term bootstrapping sometimes, meaning getting started by yourself, just self-funding. Still, there's no return on the investment. So like all the money and time that I put into Snowdrift, I don't expect any return on that. I was hesitant to get involved at all, but I happened to be in a position where I was able to put in all of the volunteer time and investment, and it's been an interesting journey. But I don't like the term bootstrapping because somehow people miss this. Bootstrapping literally comes from the term pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, which is impossible. It's sarcastic. That's the point. You can't pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. It's like somebody saying, you know, you could just pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. Like, they're being sarcastic. And somehow we miss that and people think that it's possible. Which is a mistake, because I think that leads us to not see the truth of the economics. We don't see the dilemmas. We think that things can be done and we can blame individual projects for struggling or whatever, when we don't see that this is it's a systemic problem and it needs understanding and it needs systemic solutions. So the competition from proprietary software is a lot of the problem for free software. We have proprietary hardware and software. We have features that draw people to using it. There's network effects where other people you know use that particular proprietary software, or your schools or businesses or whatever do. They advertise it really well because they have good advertising budgets, and people don't know about free software alternatives. So the use of proprietary software itself is a huge obstacle. If there was no proprietary software, everybody would just accept the mediocre free software, even if it wasn't well-funded. So in a sense, if we care about software freedom, one thing we could do is advocate that people reject proprietary software, not work for proprietary software companies. Now, this is a hard sell, but that's, you know, one of the challenges. in order to have free software, we need to have higher quality. We need to market it well. We need to get the proprietary software out of the way. That could be blocking the ads or defunding it or whatever else. If we could get all of that done, that would be wonderful. But I just want to be clear, that takes a lot of resources. So that's the stuff we need funding for. We need to fund that work of marketing and making and developing and supporting free software. And then, you know, that would be done if we can get over this coordination problem. Incidentally, some people, again, don't like the government involvement in things. I certainly don't support the government support of proprietary software through patents and monopolies where you have this legally enforced monopoly. If we were going to use government policy, I think we could actually basically get rid of proprietary software with a very simple set of policies, which there's no realistic chance of getting. But you just have to abolish copyright and patent law and prohibit DRM and mandate source release for published works. And then we'd have a totally free free culture, free software for everything. We could advocate for those things. Of course, doing that, lobbying the government for legislative changes, that takes a lot of resources too. And that's the same dilemma. Now, ironically, of course, public goods are extremely economical. They maximize the amount of utility people can get. They have creative synthesis. We don't have tons of noise and like a zillion apps that do the same thing, which happen because each person's trying to get some share of the market and they can't utilize the same thing from somebody else's stuff. Instead, you can have with Flow, we can have Wikipedia and everybody contributes to the article and improves it, and it just creates this better synthesis. So if we could have a new public goods economy, I will fix that typo sometime. We need a public goods economy that is based not on scarcity and exclusion, but is based on open abundance. That is not trivial because it goes against all of the basic dynamics of our system today, but the coordination is possible. All the resources that we have, the basic support in society for people doing work, getting food and shelter and medical care and the things that we need in order to then spend our time doing creative work, they already exist. And we just need to figure out how to build a system around which those resources go to the people who need it without introducing extra exclusions, which undermine the whole flow that we want. So thank you for listening. And I hope that as you go forward, you will just explore all of these options in your life, and you'll be able to think about what's going on and understand the systemic issues with free software. And, you know, work with me and others on figuring out what we can do about this and how we can better coordinate from that basic framing of diagnosing the problem and understanding the economics. We can start thinking about what to do about it, and that will be the next step. And that's a whole nother very long and extended conversation that I hope you'll join me in. So you can reach me at Aaron@snowdrift.coop or on social media, Mastodon at wolftune@social.coop. And I have my personal website is wolftune.com, which is not perfect in terms of all the things. I have some apologies about how I've got that set up, but it focuses some on free software issues for music and musicians, which is focused on my music and my day job. On IRC and especially now on matrix.org, there's a Snowdrift channel, which you can reach us that way. And we also have a discourse forum. So those are other places to engage with these topics with us, but I hope you'll also take the conversations to wherever else you're engaged in the free software movement. So thanks. In case people didn't hear the question, how do we shift public support for these types of things? And some of that is just literally public policy. If I felt that I had more effect, if it would be more practical for me to change the legal system, you know, change laws by talking to legislators and getting them to support the type of economic system I'm describing, then I would be doing that instead of trying to make a fundraising website. And that's my personal take. Some people are more, you know, don't like government and state and whatever. Thankfully, one of the things about Snowdrift.coop is totally appeals to the anarchists, left and right, and whatever, and the more, you know, socialist or big government sort of, like, nobody minds that a bunch of people decide voluntarily to coordinate together to do something good for the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
But personally, I would be happy with changing all of these things. I think realistically, politically, there are two dynamics at play. One of them is simply education and awareness. Like, if we use this language that I'm proposing today, don't talk about non-rivalrousness. That's like non-starter for human conversation on the street with regular people or even politicians. If we talk about these issues, and we don't just say abstractly, oh, open abundance, it sounds wonderful, because that sounds kind of pie in the sky. If we talk about it like we really understand these things exist, there really are open abundant things, it's a travesty that we don't support them better if we coordinate to support them. If we talk about just this basic push that I'm giving today, then that's changing the zeitgeist. That's changing how we talk about it. That's changing, people just go throughout the day, they see the just stuff in their town, the public library or the parks or whatever, and they start to think, how does this work? And, oh, they start seeing the world from this angle, we can make a big effect that way. And if legislators were seeing it that way, you know, okay, so that's one side. Second side, though, is there is a ton of money in the system as is. There's a ton of power in proprietary software and people who benefit from exclusivity and scarcity, artificial scarcity in many cases. And, you know, they're not going to go down without a fight. So if you start suggesting that we have the schools all coordinate all the schools in an entire state so that they all start using some free software and are coordinated in funding it, so now you have well-funded software that does what the schools need it to be to do, you're not going to have like whoever's doing has their entire business is selling their software to schools. They're not going to just be like, oh yeah, that sounds great. No, they're going to spread FUD and they're going to tell the schools this is a terrible mistake, and they're going to say that it's got, you know, they'll do everything they can to stop it. So yeah, that's the other battle we have to fight.
That's it. It's hitting out at different fronts at the same time, and then to be able to handle that. Had another question as well in chat. Just going to try to summarize it. It says we can go over time if we need to. Okay, so sure. It says, this isn't so much of a question as it is an opportunity to talk briefly about cultural works. What maps over from what you described here and what doesn't? How should we fund individual creative projects?
Well, I have to say, like I emphasized, that things are a continuum. I really think that's important, not to see the world in black and white. In the case of like a video, say something like this, we publish this under a Creative Commons attribution license or something, share alike. You know, that's what I use, CC by SA. And I'm assuming that that'll be the case for this, and certainly whatever future version of this talk that I put out will be under that license. Now, I can give you my slides, and maybe you edit it, and, you know, the little thing where I messed something up, or fix the slide, and somebody can improve it, and yay, and we could translate it to another language. So there's things you can do creatively, but it's way harder to work with video, and especially depending upon how it is in some particular, you know, somebody else can't substitute their head for my head from one moment to say something I didn't say. I mean, who knows what the future of this technology is, but software works in different ways. So books, you know, novels or something. Sure, people write fan fiction. You can just like take the story and make the story go slightly differently. Why not? That totally applies. And then you have things like video where, you know, are people going to put every single outtake that they took on their video just so that the world has access to, that would be like the full source, so to speak. Yeah. And so it's a continuum, but I think it applies completely. I don't think there's any argument that has, in my opinion, like I've looked at it, I've scrutinized it, I've had the arguments. I've never seen any argument for free software that actually doesn't hold up just as well for cultural works. I don't think, I don't agree with the decision that some people in the free software world have that opinions, articles about free software, but they're like political opinion articles, should be no derivatives. You know, nobody should be able to change them. No, I think that people shouldn't be able to misrepresent them and say that this is the original when they changed it. They shouldn't be able to say that they wrote all the stuff when they didn't. They actually just tweaked something. But they should be allowed to make the tweaks and present it as a tweak. The same thing with software.
Yeah, absolutely. It reminds me a bit of the Debian, Mozilla, Firefox situation that
That's a trademark issue. So when you have trademark, that's like making it clear to people what this is, whether it was changed, whether it's the original. I don't see any problem with that. The problem is when you say people that they're not allowed to make changes.
Yeah.
If you say you have to make, if you make changes, you have to change the name or you got to label it. That's fine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We got another
question. My song. Yeah, go ahead.
We'll keep it to this one. I think we'll be the last.
I was just going to say that you take my song and sorry if we're talking over each other. Little lag. Go ahead.
No, it's all good. Do you think open and abundant resources created through government funding can eventually create so much free, liber, open software that they run the idea monopolists out of market? Is there perhaps a power relationship missing? Sure.
It probably is already happening. People don't realize that there's a huge amount, like everywhere where we see open and abundant things thriving is like a place where there could have been some proprietary rent-seeking company that we just like are happy we don't have in the world. That's like the alternate dysfunctional reality. We have public libraries. I mean, we're at threat of losing them. There was a great talk about ebooks and things like that just earlier today. We have public parks. In most places, we have public parks and people use them and appreciate them. And if you didn't have public parks, you really, really didn't have any public parks, you could just have private parks with whatever rules that the owners of the park do and however they exploit people to who want to be outside. But we don't accept that. There's almost nowhere in the world, I think, without public parks. And it could be the same for software. There's no reason that we can't all just coordinate, put the resources we have towards free software, and then there's no reason or very little reason for anybody to make proprietary software.
Mm-hmm. That example at the parks really, really stuck with me. Are there any closing remarks before we wrap up the talk?
I want to emphasize that people need some real world input to this. Like if you just talk about it abstractly, it doesn't click with people. But if you literally just start asking the question, you know, here I am at the park, here I am at the library, how did this happen? When I first started using free software, I was like, why am I getting updates? Where are these coming from? Who's sending me updates? Why is their server giving me updates for free? What is going on? And I still have those questions today. And, you know, finding out the answer was something like, a lot of these people are kind of volunteers, but actually the main company that pays for the server is doing something with this service thing, which is fine, but then they're also connected to this other company that does proprietary software. And like, you know, it's complicated. But some of it was like, oh, well, this is actually just like not really sustainable and this thing is going to fail at some point. And like, this isn't reliable because it's working right now, but at some point somebody burns out and then quits and then the server goes down or whatever it is. And you'd have to deal with that. You have to like ask, how do the things you actually deal with in the world come to be? And then now we have a framework. So you look at this framing and you go, how does this exist? And the answer isn't just it's public goods or it's common goods. The answer might be, oh, this public goods exists because it's supported by this company that does stuff with private goods.
Yep.
You know, there's relationships there. But start looking at that and start talking about that in the world so that you can, you know, make sense of it. And then at least we have the vision clear and we can start having the conversation about how do we coordinate better to build the world we really want.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your presentation today. Thanks for everyone for joining us.
Thank you, everyone. I look forward to continuing the conversation.